From WRKF in Baton Rouge and WWNO in New Orleans, you're listening to Louisiana Considered. On the show today, a community farm that's been in New Orleans City Park for more than a decade could close. Plus, we'll hear about a couple fighting their incorrect water utility bill. That's coming up, but first. Louisiana voters made their choice for Republican and Democratic presidential nominees over the weekend. Donald Trump and President Joe Biden easily won their respective parties' election during Saturday's primaries. Voters also weighed in on a number of statewide issues. To help us debrief the results and what it means as we look ahead to the November election, we're joined by Brian Brox, Associate Professor of Political Science at Tulane University. Hi, Brian.
Good to be with you.
Well, first up, let's talk about the top of the ballot, the outcome there. Any surprises in the presidential race?
No surprises. Large wins for both President Biden and former President Trump, which is understandable given that the nominations are largely sewn up already. So Louisiana just joins in a long stretch of states that have kind of put us back with a rematch with the 2020 race.
Yeah. Does that outcome tell us anything about what the November general could look like in our state?
No, I don't think it does. I mean, both overwhelmingly have the support of the partisans within their party in Louisiana. However, Louisiana still is trending as a red state, so I don't see a lot of trouble for former President Trump winning Louisiana's electoral votes in November.
Okay, so it looks like he's secured that support will staying solid. It looks like it'll stay solid all the way through in November.
Absolutely. The other candidates that technically remained on the ballot got no more than a smattering of votes. So Donald Trump will be very secure with Republican support in this state.
Yeah. Now, Louisiana voters have supported former President Trump, as you've said, in the past two presidential elections. Has his base changed at all over the past 4 years?
I don't think his base has changed. What I think he's done is consolidated his control over the Republican Party, both nationally as well as within Louisiana. Any elected official that might want to see a different future for the Republican Party has largely gone by the wayside. I think he has the support of both the rank and file Republicans in the state as well as the elected class.
Yeah. Do you expect to see Mr. Trump or Mr. Biden? Do you expect to see either of the presidential candidates actually campaign here in Louisiana?
I think it's unlikely that they will campaign. It's possible that they will return to the state for fundraisers through the course of the summer and the fall. They may throw in a campaign event based on that trip, but they would not be coming strictly to campaign. Fundraising is likely the reason we would ever see them in Louisiana.
Okay. Well, Brian, besides the presidential race, any other big surprises out of Saturday?
I'm not sure that it's necessarily a surprise, but I was very interested to see the result of the Caddo Parish Sheriff's race. That was an unusual route with three elections taking place. And the election of what I believe is the first African-American sheriff for that parish. So that was a very interesting result. Required a lot of effort on the part of his campaign to win and then continue to go through the legal process to finally win the race. I'm also interested to see what the final implications are for the various Republican and Democratic party committee elections. The parties had their internal elections for new leadership. The Republican Party is in obviously pretty good shape given its status with the governor and control over the legislature, but the Democratic Party in Louisiana needs a rebuild.
Yeah.
And will these new leaders elected this past Saturday be able to change the fortunes of the Democratic Party in Louisiana?
Okay. Well, I do want to just give some details. You mentioned Caddo, the Democratic candidate there, Henry Whitehorn, got 53% of the vote in Saturday's election. He is the parish's first Black sheriff, as you mentioned. And for those that don't remember, he won by a single vote in November. The courts ordered a new election after finding evidence of six illegal votes. This time, he won it by more than 4,000 votes.
Part of that just reflects the part of his campaign and his supporters to just make sure that there wasn't any doubt. Obviously, this is a very closely divided electorate on this matter. But this is a clear win, and so he will now have the the task of not only running the sheriff's office, but running in a way that perhaps produces the trust of the entire parish that seems to be divided on this race.
We're speaking with Brian Brox, Associate Professor of Political Science at Tulane University, about Saturday's primary election results. Louisiana's Democratic Party, you mentioned, it's seen some reform efforts. There was a group of over 100 candidates titled themselves as the Blue Reboot. They ran to overhaul the party leadership at the local level. Were they successful?
I think to some degree they may be successful. I haven't gone through district by district and parish by parish to see who has ended up on the parish executive committees as well as the state central committee. That said, they've run very strong candidates, and they did manage to oust the current chair, Katie Bernhardt, from her state central committee position. So there's clearly discontent within the rank and file of the Louisiana Democratic Party, wanting leadership that is going to be useful and successful in producing electoral wins in the future. So they're clearly got a large task ahead of them, but they're taking the first steps with this election.
And does this put Bernhardt's future in question?
Technically, legally, no. She is allowed to remain as state party chair despite having lost her seat. Nonetheless, her future has been in question for months now, given criticism from within her own party over her leadership of the state central committee. So the party will have to decide what it wants its future to be, whether it is more related to issues and kind of policy and ideological commitments, or whether it's based on fundraising and grassroots organizing or some combination of the two. But they clearly have not been as successful in candidate recruitment and voter mobilization. So whoever is in charge going into the next couple of election cycles really needs to redouble their efforts to make the Democratic Party, well, if they want to win, right, make the Democratic Party more viable in this state.
Well, now that the primary is over, should we expect to see the election season begin to heat up here in Louisiana? And what would that look like?
I think now that the primaries here are over, I think we'll probably kind of elections will take a back seat as we both kind of face governing, face the spring, face other aspects of American politics, and the candidates who have already secured the nomination work at securing their support, raising funds. I think in Louisiana and elsewhere, the campaign will ramp back up as we approach the conventions in the mid to late summer. And then certainly in September, we'll see the fall campaign kick off in earnest. But I think Louisianans will have a bit of a break here.
Brian Brox, Associate Professor of Political Science at Tulane University. Brian, thanks so much for being here.
Good to be with you.
A community farm that's been in New Orleans City Park for more than a decade is slated to be eliminated or moved under a proposed plan to redevelop the park. It's run by the nonprofit Grodat Youth Farm. Grodat leaders and some members of the community are fighting to keep the farm in its present location. Drew Costley reported this story for Verite News and joins us now. Drew, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Karen.
Drew, let's start with some background on the Grodat Youth Farm. What's the history and significance of this space?
Yeah, so Tulane University started this community garden, a community farm, an urban farm in 2012. And it is basically supposed to be, it's a youth program. It teaches youth about sustainable agriculture, but also teaches them about leadership skills, interpersonal skills. And it draws in youth from all over the city. So some of the, you know, from some of the more affluent neighborhoods, some of the whiter neighborhoods with people from communities that have high percentages of people of color, poor communities. And sort of gives them a job and teaches them how to grow their own food and teaches them life skills.
And it's been a presence in the community for quite some time now, more than a decade. It's about, what, an acre and a half in City Park. You mentioned it's teaching teenagers about sustainable farming. I know they've been growing and selling and donating produce from that farm to the community. How did GrowDat become a target for elimination?
Yeah, so the City Park Conservancy is undertaking a master planning process to massively redevelop City Park. And they were trying to find a way to connect the north side of the park and the south side of the park. And they came up with this idea to create a promenade through sort of the middle of the park that is a road that goes through a lot of the park, but it goes like literally would bisect GrowDat, where GrowDat is currently. The road would just run right through GrowDat, and the idea is that if the road is going to be there, then GrowDat probably won't be there. They'll either relocate somewhere else in the park or somewhere else in the city. So that's how this came to be. The City Park Conservancy is trying to, they say that they're trying to increase access to the park, and and they've said that they may have to take the land that GrowDat's on in order to do that.
What are you hearing from GrowDat leadership about moving to a new location? What are the objections?
Yeah, I mean, they want to fight for their location. They have been, people are shocked, devastated. Some people aren't surprised because, especially post Katrina, there's been a lot of redevelopment that doesn't keep in mind community members and communities that have been around for decades, if not centuries, in New Orleans, and has taken away pieces of their community that they value and cherish and that play an integral role in their health and safety and sense of belonging. And yeah, they've spent over a decade building a relationship with the land that they're on, and that means like working with the soil, doing crop rotation, irrigation, and they'll have to rebuild all that from scratch if they move to a different location, right? Like you can't just magically change the soil in a place as soon as you get there. It's not like I use the metaphor of like, it's not like you're moving from one apartment to another apartment, right? And even then, there's like time that you'll have to spend settling in and making it home again. And yeah, there's going to be a big ripple effect if GrowDat has to relocate to food access in New Orleans, to youth engagement in New Orleans, and to community in New Orleans, because it's also a site where a lot of community events are held for people who are otherwise marginalized, like queer community, low-income community, and communities of color. So yeah, it's gonna be a big loss if they have to relocate.
We're discussing plans to eliminate or move the GrowDat Youth Farm in New Orleans at City Park with Drew Costley, who reported the story for Verite News. Drew, has the Park Conservancy offered another plot of land in City Park for the GrowDat farm to relocate to?
They said that they might give an alternative space, but they haven't specified what yet. I think because there's so many moving parts, they say that because there's so many moving parts with the master planning process, they haven't settled where all of the different programming that the park has to offer will be located in the park. So, but they have acknowledged that they are, that they've communicated with GrowDat that there might be a relocation and they might try to find alternative spaces within the park, but they haven't specified where yet.
Now, you mentioned there have been several community meetings about changes in the park, but not specifically the GrowDat farm. How are these meetings going? I know there was one just this past week where people from the community that are wanting the GrowDat farm to stay right where it is showed up. And I know you were there. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so there was a planning meeting our public engagement meeting on Thursday, and it was supposed to be about different water systems in the park and the city parks master plan for those features. But GrowDat and community, like GrowDat staff, the youth participants and community supporters of the farm and the youth that go to the farm all showed up to the meeting, and it was like a meeting with stations. It wasn't like a public forum, but they made it into a public forum where they were asking senior leadership, executive level leadership at City Park Conservancy questions about why the road needed to be where it is. Have they considered any alternatives? Do they understand the impact of relocating or closing this farm on youth in New Orleans and on the community in general? I think one of the more interesting things that people were bringing up was the fact that GrowDat produces so much produce that ends up either in their CSA program, their community supported agriculture program, or they donate it. And so I think GrowDat has said that over the 12 years that they've existed, they've grown over 450,000 pounds of produce that's ended up in New Orleans. And, you know, it's a city with food access issues. And so they were saying, like, if you want to do something for the community, why aren't you considering all these things, right? Why aren't you considering the improvements of food access that the farm creates, the life skills and the agricultural skills that children learn at the farm, and the source of community that the farm has created for people in the city?
Are there any other public meetings planned, any that specifically deal with the future of the GrowDat farm, or is this in the minds of the City Park Conservancy a matter that's already been settled?
Yeah, so there are three more public meetings in the master planning process. City Park has said that they're going to put together an ideas committee that will have representatives from different stakeholder groups, and GrowDat will be one of them. And one of the remaining public meetings has to do with programming, like what things to do City Park will include in its master plan. So that'll be an opportunity for people to have their voices heard on GrowDat's future in City Park. And then the CEO of City Parks, the City Park Conservancy, Carol Lambright, agreed last night after a lot of like lobbying and advocacy, sort of agreed on the spot to have a public forum specifically for GrowDat and its future.
Drew Costley is a reporter for Verite News. Drew, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Karen.
From WRKF in Baton Rouge and WWNO in New Orleans, you're listening to Louisiana Considered. I'm Karen Henderson. It's time for our March Utility Bill of the Month. Jackson, Mississippi residents have dealt with more than a decade of missing and inaccurate water bills. The city's trying to fix the troubled system and make sure everyone pays what they actually owe. But Stephen Basaha of the Gulf States Newsroom reports that some Jackson residents say their new bills still have problems.
The first Jacksonian we got to meet is Catherine Lacey. She's lived in the city all her life.
I just like it here. I was born and raised. It's all I know.
Now, by Jackson standards, Lacey is lucky. For about 20 years, she's lived in her home, and her water bills have arrived every month like clockwork. She's got them all printed and ready to show off.
$82.79 for the following month, then $64.63, and then another one.
What makes this unusual is that seemingly everyone in Jackson has had some water bill nightmare over the last decade, or at least know someone who has. Jackson's water system has historically been underfunded, and faulty water meters installed across the city a decade ago only made matters worse. And if you didn't receive an expensive bill, well, it's probably because you didn't get one at all, because lots of water bills just went missing.
82, 85.
You might have a Jackson record for most bills in a row.
Yes.
Our second Jacksonian has not had Lacey's luck. Jeremy Brown moved to the city about 4 years ago, and for most of that time, he didn't receive any water bill. That had him worried.
What should I do if they come cut it off? You know, can they cut it off because I haven't received one, or water must be free down here or something? You know, we don't receive the water bill, so.
Hey, no water bill sounds pretty good. But it's not like Brown was able to take advantage of that. Because you got to understand that Jackson has long suffered from boil water notices, basically warnings to residents that the water is not safe to drink or cook with until the notice ends. So Brown, he does not trust the water.
All my water be jug water, bottle water. You know, it's kind of expensive, you know, buying. You can't even brush, you know, use the water to put on your toothbrush and stuff.
I use bottled water for everything besides bathing and washing clothes.
Now, the alarm bells for both Lacey and Brown came when their situations actually reversed. Lacey was the one in December with a missing bill. So she checked her account online.
I was wondering how much my bill was going to be. And I looked and it said $604. And I had to double look. I said, no, that can't be right.
$600 for 2 months of water. Now, Brown's warning sign came not because of a missing bill. Again, he's used to that. Instead, what's new is he actually got one in January.
I thought it was a check, you know, when I first got it.
Oh, that would have been a much nicer situation. Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You know, how much was it on that water bill?
It was $1,375.
Nearly $1,400. Now, Lacey, she called Jackson Water to see what was going on. And the person on the other end says,
well, you have a leak on your property.
You think there could be a leak?
No. I don't think, because I don't see any water on the outside or inside. So I don't think it's a leak. It's a glitch in the system, because I'm not the only one in Jackson having a problem with the water system.
Several Jacksonians messaged us since January saying they had bills that just didn't seem right. Either it was an expensive bill blamed on a leak like Lacey's, or it was a situation like Brown's. His bill actually said he didn't owe much for January, about $120. Really, the trouble came from a line saying he had a remaining balance of nearly $1,300. Brown thinks they're charging him for previous months, months where he says again he never received bills.
If they would have been on top of it, I could have been right there with it. So
it's hard to budget for a bill when you haven't been receiving one for a year.
Thank you. So, you know, if you're thinking every month you've been $116, it's not hard to pay. Compared to just up and just pay $1,300, you know.
There's no standard for how far back utilities should go for charging customers for missing bills. It could be months, it could even be years. Jackson Water did not respond when asked about its policy. The utility does offer payment plans, and Brown says he'll look into that. Meanwhile, Lacey, she's still fighting her bills. A plumber did not find any sign of a leak, and he's coming back to check. In the meantime, she's got another bill, and now her balance is about $1,100. Lacey's on a fixed income, and paying so much for water is not something she can afford.
Oh, I'm just frustrated about it. It just, sometimes I have sleepless nights. I have dreams about it, and I just ask God he got to fix it.
You have dreams about the water problems?
Yes, it's so high. How, you know, dream that my water going to get cut off and I'm not able to pay it, so it's not fair.
Some utilities will wipe clean whatever someone owes if they could prove they have a leak. Jackson Water did not say if it's one of them. For the Gulf States Newsroom, I'm Stephen Basaha.
From WRKF in Baton Rouge and WWNO in New Orleans, you've been listening to Louisiana Considered. I'm Karen Henderson. Thanks to our guests, Associate Professor of Political Science at Tulane, Brian Brox, and Verite News reporter, Drew Costley. Our managing producer is Alana Schreiber. Our contributing producers are Matt Bloom and Adam Voss. We receive production and technical support from Garrett Pittman and our assistant producer, Aubrey Purcell. You can listen to Louisiana Considered Monday through Friday at noon and 7 p.m. on this station. It's available on Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Major support for Louisiana Considered provided by Rouse's Markets, a Louisiana shopping experience, with additional support from the Historic New Orleans Collection.